And was it very different when you played for the county? Playing for...
Well, I don't think I played for Gloucestershire at Gloucester. I played a game at Gloucester for the under-23s, or maybe I played for Gloucestershire against the under-23s, and I was a reserve. But
you played for the South and South West against the Midlands.
Yeah, in the county trial.
Under-23 trial.
All right.
At King Salman, Richard Morgan, Stuart Dix, and Steve Boyle were playing in that one.
Yeah, that would have been
good.
They
were playing for the South and South West alongside you. Yeah.
That's right. The under-23s, that was early days. We certainly... Gloucestershire, I played... My debut for Gloucestershire was an extraordinary game. It was my first year at university. I'd been playing fullback for Cambridge University. I was a scrum half by trade, and Gloucestershire selectors decided I would play outside half without having played there since my school days. And they said, they phoned up and said, look, you know, we know you're a bit busy, you've got the varsity match and so on, and I gather Cambridge University going on a tour to Italy, but we've got a county quarter-final against Hertfordshire in Bristol, and we'd like it if you could play at outside half. So I said, OK, yeah, fine, I'll play at outside half. And Gloucestershire managed to decide that, OK, they were going to play it at Bristol, but they didn't want to kowtow too much to the Bristol supporters, so they picked a side full of Gloucester players.
Nine of them, yeah.
I think there was at least nine. Was probably more than that, but certainly the most controversial was the fact that John Pullin, who was the most capped England hooker of all time, was dropped by Gloucestershire for the game, and they brought in Dave Protheroe, who was at Gloucester. He was Gloucester at the time. He certainly went to play for Moseley, wasn't he? Might have been
Cheltenham, and then Moseley.
So they got Dave Protheroe in, so they dropped Pullin. So the Bristol crowd is absolutely... Why have you picked a Gloucestershire side with more Gloucester players than Bristol players? And don't forget, Bristol were the reigning champions. And the crowd was sort of quite anti the sort of Gloucester element. And in those days, again, this is not quite apocryphal. Well, it's sort of apocryphal, but there's a grain of truth in it. That whenever we had a county training session... you'd find that the Bristol boys would go off to one pub afterwards and the Gloucester boys would go off to another one. Certainly they would never talk that much to each other, you know. And but anyway, we played this game at Bristol, and Gloucester struggled. And I was playing at outside half, which is a position I'd never played in men's rugby, senior rugby, before. I'd just come back from a tour of Italy where I played 3 matches in 5 days. Arrived back by playing that night, got in, told you're playing outside half for Gloucestershire. I was supposed to be playing with Richard Harding, but Peter Kingston had to play instead because Harding was injured. It was a bit of a difficult game, and we nearly lost the game, and it developed into a bit of a punch up and a whatever. And we only won it because Peter Butler kicked a goal near the end. But Mike Burton got sent off, and there's a fantastic picture that of him doing this theatrical bow to the crowd, because he got sent off, and all the Bristol fans were sort of fed up with Gloucester and Gloucester players playing in their side, and if they picked Bristol players it would be far better and all these things. So they actually sort of booed him as he came off. So he did this great bow and left the field. We only just got away with that one. But that was good. And of course he got sent off in my first ever international as well.
Yes, that was down in Brisbane, wasn't it?
That was down in Brisbane, yeah.
Tell us about that.
I'll tell you about it. Well, because that, again, had a few Gloucester players in it, involved in that. On the tour, England took this fantastic... It's extraordinary when you look back of it that England went on tour. They used about 20 players in the 1975 Six and Five Nations Championship, and then decided to pick another 25 different players almost to play against Australia. And they were so patronising about Australia, we just picked some youngsters. So there were a load of youngsters, including myself, who'd never played for England before. Peter Butler was the other fullback. We didn't have a cap between us. I don't think Butts had got his cap by then. And the scrum halves were Peter Kingston of Gloucester, who I don't think had been capped by that at that point, and Brian Ashton, who went on to be England's coach. They were the two scrum halves. Alan Wordsworth was one of the outside halves. Neil Bennett was the other. They had one cap between them. So halfbacks, fullbacks had one cap between us going down to Australia. Absolutely wet behind the ears. Burton came along as well. We had some... It was a great... fun bunch of people, but we were not really very equipped to deal with the Australians, particularly given that they were starting to become quite good, and particularly because they decided, those rough old days of the 70s where he had home referees, so there was no such thing as a neutral referee, and there was a lot of violence, and the Aussies decided that they were going to beat us up as well as beat us. And we had a succession of games where there was a lot of fists flying, and there was a guy called Steve Finane who played for Australia as a prop, and he was a solicitor by trade, but he's actually one of the dirtiest players you've ever seen in your life, and he was called, he built up his reputation on that tour as the Phantom Puncher of Sydney, because he ended up laying out three of our players in the Sydney match. So it was sort of being built up into this awful, you know, get your retaliation in first, punch-ups, home referees, Australian referees. It was going to be a real... It was, somebody was going to kick off. And, of course, in the first test, I got injured, so I was on the bench in the first test. And in the first test, a punch-up started, lots of off-the-ball incidents, two players. In those days, you could only have two replacements out of six. Six would be on the bench, only two could go on. And we'd used up two of our replacements in the first 10 minutes. And I knew I could never get on the field now because the two had been used. And it just developed in this big punch-up. And we got to the situation where Australia won it. We were licking our wounds. We took 25 players on tour and five of them were invalided home. So it was that sort of a rough old, tough old thing. And this was then the setup for the next test, the second test in Brisbane, which I was getting fitter and they decided I was going to play in. And it was the time when the Australians were, it was not just pom bashing, it was sort of pom beating. So there's a lot of rancour and a lot of ill feeling going on, and the press gave us a hard time. And there was this fantastic story about Phil Blakeway, the Gloucester prop, who was asked, we were in this hotel and we were just lounging around by the pool or whatever, and Phil was asked to show off his muscles because, you know, he used to be a professional boxer. So he'd show off his muscles in front of them. They said, can we take a photo of this? So they took a photo of Phil flexing his muscles, and then they slapped it on the back page of the Sun. He thought it was just another guest in the hotel sort of admiring his physique. And they slapped this picture on the back page of the tabloid saying, ex-heavyweight boxer says, England may lose the rugby, but they won't lose the fights. No. So, and he wasn't even playing. He was on the bench. So it was, you know, it was sort of built up into that thing. And we had a coach by the name of John Burgess, who was a Lancastrian tub-thumping, you know, he would swear every other word and he would froth at the mouth and get everybody really psyched up. And it seemed to work for the Lancashire boys, and they got very excited. And I was going, what on earth is going on here? But anyway, they built us up and they got really sort of aggressive. And the Australians had another guy called Dave Brockhoff, who was their coach. And he was exactly the same. So there were these two coaches in the dressing rooms, banging things and thumping and crashing and shouting and swearing. And we're all going to knock shit out of each other, etc., etc. And so it was built up, and this is my debut. I was only 19. I'd only played 10 or 12 games as a fullback. Please play for England. Of course you say yes. I got on the field, and the kickoff went ahead, and I think we caught it, but the ball came slowly back on our side, which gave Australia the opportunity of wading into the England team. And I remember my first vision of international rugby is of Barry Nelms, who was our loose head prop, lying on the floor and having his head kicked in by, it seemed, most of the Australian pack. They were just sort of tap dancing on his head and kicking him. And then there was a bit of a fight, and there was some punches, and the ball spilled off into touch, and referee blew his whistle, and everybody sort of picked themselves up and counted, you know, fingers and bones and that sort of thing. And Bill Beaumont, who was playing only, I think it was his second ever international, it might have been his third, his head was split open, so he had to go off for some stitches. So he hadn't even got into a line-out yet, so the ball's thrown into the first line-out. And again, you're full-back, and you're trying to get your first ever touch on the ball, and you just see this ball sailing over the top, because nobody went for it. All the forwards just turned around and smacked each other. There was kicking and fighting and punching. The ball went off into midfield. And the referee is sort of blowing his whistle frantically. But there were these fights that had to be continued, it seemed. And one of them involved Michael Burton, who had got this guy called Peter Horton by the old lapels. And the whistle had gone, and Berto was there. And he had Horton, and Horton was one of those nasty, dirty players that had been niggling us in all the previous games. And Berto dropped the nut on him, the King's Own Kiss, or whatever we like to call it. dropped the nut on this guy, and the referee had blown the whistle, and everybody stopped. So they're looking at this. So it was like slow motion. You see Burton is going, ah. Oh. And so the referee called him over. And this is when we start going into the sort of, into the after dinner stories things. I can't verify all of the things that were said here, but the referee called Burton across and said, late tackle, mate, you know, penalty. And he said, it's not late tackle. He said, I'm penalising you. That was bloody disgraceful, blah, blah, blah. And Burton's excuse was, well, he had to have it. Because he got him there, and you know, the boys sort of thought, well, that was fair enough. But they took a kick at goal, and they didn't get it, and I didn't get to touch it because it went too wide. So I still haven't touched the ball in international rugby. It gets kicked back to a dropout back to their winger, who kicks it and charges after it. So I'm covering across to catch to get hold of this ball when the whistle goes again. And what's happened is that the winger has run straight into Berto's elbow. And it was about 15 yards. He'd run 15 yards, so he ran into this elbow and went down like a sack of spuds. And the referee said, I've got to send you off. And again, this is where the dialogue is invented, possibly. But he said, I've got to send you off. What's that for, ref? Well, late tackle. They're late. I got there as soon as I could. And then Beaumont comes back on, because Beaumont's had his head stitched and he doesn't know he's got to play tight head prop, and he sees Berto. Berto's not talking for the first time ever, and Burton can talk at the hind legs off a donkey. Burton's not talking, he's trudging off the field with his head down. First ever Englishman to be sent off in international rugby. Beaumont's running on, doesn't know what's going on. Penalty there, they've got a kick at goal or something like that. And he goes up to the ref and says, what's happening? You know, what's going on? Oh, I had to send him off. And again, this is the story. Why have you sent him off? Late tackle. And Beaumont looks up at the clock, which now says 3:02, and he says, well, he couldn't have been that late, could he? those are the stories that go around Berto's sending off. But, happy days.
What was the social side of the tour like?
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, but we were amateurs. It was an amateur game. And, you know, in those days, people didn't go on holiday to Australia. Mm. They didn't go that. They didn't travel very far for a holiday. And so this was like you're being invited to go on holiday to Australia, the other side of the world, where your expenses are getting paid for, you're being put up in hotels, and you have to play a bit of rugby as well, which you like doing. So it wasn't, you know, so you just took advantage of all the things that were on offer, and the social life, and they wanted to take us on golf courses or on boats, or, you know, and so you mixed. It was a social occasion, but you also had the opportunity of training every day, because when you're an amateur at home, you don't, you know, you've got a job of work to do, or if you're a student or whatever, so you don't get those opportunities to train. So you actually, it's a bonus, you can train every day, but, you know, it was also, it was a social time and a holiday and so on. So it was great fun off the field, and it was totally amateur. I mean, one of my memories is I got injured in the first game, and we didn't take a physio with us, we didn't take a doctor with us, we took a manager and a coach. And the manager was a guy called Alec Lewis, who used to play for England then as a selector. And John Burgess was our coach. But we didn't get any medical backup at all, any extra people. So I was injured in Perth and had to fly to Sydney. And then this ankle was hurting, and they were saying, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, what can I do? And there was no facilities for getting it treated, looked at, or analysed in any sort of way at all. And in the end, at one point I had to take two buses across the city of Sydney to go and get some treatment at the Australian Institute of Sport in order to come back by two buses to get back to the place. And nobody thought about x-raying it or sending me for an x-ray. It was just a total sort of amateur trip. And the two other people that came on the tour eventually were the president and the vice president of the Rugby Football Union. Lovely people, lovely men, but blazered blokes who love their gin and tonics. And it was one of the bit in the, there's a programme, there's a bit in the programme which I've kept from my debut. It was a little thing about a very great welcome is extended to the president and the vice president of the Rugby Union, who know how to drink left-handed, if you know what that means. It was sort of one of those sort of things saying, you know, as a rugger buggers sort of thing, you always got to drink left-handed and all this sort of stuff. And they're very sociable people, and we welcome them and all this. It was just so far removed from, you know, 21st century rugby in terms of intensity and ferocity. On the field, it was a bit of a bloodbath. And certainly if there had been neutral referees or the neutral touch judges or the television cameras that are now, things would have been very, very different. But, you know, those were different times.
Did you play for the Barbarians as well?
I played for the Barbars. Yeah, not at Gloucester, I think. But I played. Yes, I was a bar. I was a Barbar. I was a friend of the bar. I was a Barbar and went on one of their tours. I played against Leicester in one game. I managed to pull my hamstring.
On the Boxing Day.
Boxing Day fix. Yeah. Well, again, how daft were we in those days? You would think nothing about playing two games of rugby in 2 days. And I played for Bristol on the actual Boxing Day. Down at the Memorial Stadium, a bit mushy, but hard. Lots of mud, difficult running conditions and so on. Probably had a party afterwards and then drove up to, or was driven up to Leicester. My dad drove me up to Leicester and played for the Bar Bars and then pulled my hamstring. Didn't really put the two together and say, well, perhaps you shouldn't play two games in 2 days. Because that's what people did in those days. Right. You know, you'd never thought of turning either playing for Bristol down or playing for the Barbarians down. You certainly wouldn't think, I mustn't do one because I've got to do the other. It just... Yeah, why not?
That was usually a hard game too, wasn't it? The Boxing Day fixture for you, because it was Newbridge usually, wasn't it?
Yes. It was tough. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it? Easy game.
No, but again, you see, you know, it was amateur. It's what you did. You chose to do it. So yeah, I'll play. Now, I think another
Gloucester players on the Barbarians tour you went on.
Phil Blakeway.
Blakers would have been. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know the tour I went on was in '79, so that was a bit later. And that's the South Wales tour again, where you play four games in 5 days or something stupid, and you just turn up and play and you have fun, and you know it's really very good. No, I think another Kingzone memory. I must get that one. Was that we had a trial in my first season, maybe my second season, and they decided they weren't going to play trials at Twickenham anymore. We were going to play England against the North, England against the Midlands, and England against the West, I think. And I think we had a trial at Kingzone.
Yeah.
And I was picked as one of the fullbacks, having played in the varsity match. And again, looking back at how stupid... I played in the varsity match, and because in those days the varsity match was given this sort of mythical status, and it was on telly and everybody watched it, and 30,000 people at least turned up. And it had this status within the minds of the press and the selectors. So they picked me for an England trial the Saturday before the varsity match, which was a Tuesday, and nobody expected me to play in it because the varsity match was the most important thing and you wouldn't risk playing in a varsity match for an England trial. So I missed the first trial, and then the second trial was at Gloucester. So I scored a few points in the varsity match, and but turned up, so I didn't have to go to the first trial, you know. I bunged into this team, and we played against this England against the South, I think it was South West at Gloucester.
Yeah.
And I remember getting, and it's one of those things where you turn up and you just the night before, and then you run out together, and you've never had any practice with anybody, you don't know these. Although because we'd been on the England tour, we sort of knew each other, and every time we got round, because Gloucester were again the shed air, the Kingzone boys were so fed up with not many Gloucester boys being in the England side that they actually went out and they were chanting Wales, Wales, Wales when England ran out. So it was typical of the Gloucester sense of humour that they were making their point to the England selectors that they hadn't picked enough Gloucester boys. But I can't remember. It was an awful game. It was, not helped by the humour of the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, weren't actually following England. That more concerned with Gloucester boys than with England.
Well, the Gloucester boys were playing for the South West, right. And not for England.
That's right.